is worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California, and it is broadcast number 499, June 28, 1981. Before I get too far along in the program, I want to announce a newsletter that is being put out by Jonathan Marshall. He's the associate editor for Inquiry magazine. And if you have a pencil, write this down. If not, you can write to me and get the information later when I'm off the air. Send it to P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93922. And I'll give you this information if you want it and don't get it now. He has a newsletter going out called Parapolitics USA. The address is 747 Front Street, San Francisco, 94111. The cost is $25 a year, but I received several copies of the newsletter from Tom Davis up in Capitola and talked to Jonathan Marshall, and I think you're going to find a lot of information that complements the broadcast that I have on KLRB. He is covering various areas and articles of investigation and has categorized them, which is becoming more difficult for me to do every day as they overlap. But he is putting into various categories the pertinent articles that are appearing on those subjects, and he has about 40 or 50, 60 pages out already in just the first two issues. I think it's going to be well worth the $25 for those researchers that follow this seriously. He's broken up the categories of information into intelligence community, drugs and organized crime, exile, political activities, terrorism, the Nugenhan Bank in Australia, the Michael Sindona case, the CIA and banks, miscellaneous, and now he's into the Italian scandal, propaganda, Dewey, the Masonic scandal. The problem I'm having now is that every one of these categories is fitting together hand in glove and interweaving. The intelligence community, the CIA, the FBI, Navy intelligence are, in fact, being exposed every day in the newspapers with their dealings with drugs, narcotics, organized crime, and it's impossible to separate the intelligence community from the narcotics traffic. The exile groups, such as the anti-Castro Cubans, the Nazis, the Ustashis, the Croatians, there are a great many of people of the exile group, the Laotians, the Vietnamese, that have become part of the CIA, Defense Department, espionage activities that are into, indeed, narcotics traffic, working with the intelligence community. The bulk of the program this evening and for the next 3 or 4 weeks is going to be on the terrorism story, which is breaking, of course, in the news. Most papers had a section of the Seymour Hersh articles in the New York Times. That was Sunday, the June 14th and June 21st. He had a two-part story on Edwin Wilson of the CIA and Frank Turple, two of my favorite people, and I'm going to talk about those articles on terrorism, as I say, for the next few weeks, because I've made allegations that there has been no known terrorism in the various countries that wasn't funded by the Central Intelligence Agency or Navy or Defense Intelligence Agency. That goes for the Manson family, the SLA, is the CIA, I wrote in 1974, the Italian Red Brigade, the Baader-Meinhof group, the Japanese army, the PLO, the Palestinian group, the IRA, the headlines, and in the various articles coming out now is the admission that the Central Intelligence Agency funded the equipments for the bombs, the weapons, they supply the weapons, the training, the killing, teaching them to blow up planes and so forth, and that all the business about the violence coming from the left will have to be wiped off the slate clean, because terrorism, as it exists and is written about by the news media, is coming from, again, the intelligence community, the narcotics traffic, the exile group, and then the Nugenhan that he puts in his category. The Nugenhan Bank in Australia is now linked and has been for a while, but it was not known to me for many months, just learned it, that Mr. Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and George Coracola, Navy intelligence, and the entire ball of wax of terrorism training, Idi Amin and Gaddafi's group, as well as Carlos the Jackal, were behind the entire Nugenhan operation in Australia. They're part and parcel of the same Navy intelligence cover to hide the CIA in case they got caught. And Michael Sindona is the member of organized crime who belongs to the Italian Nazi group who betrayed the Catholic Church by taking the money out of there and putting it into Nazi funds combined with narcotics traffic and bank swindles running into hundreds of millions of dollars. He's now in a New York jail. The CIA and the banks, again, are mingled with the Nazis, the drug connections, the exile community, the terrorism, and you can't separate it. So that whatever categories he breaks down these subjects and has articles on them, you can overlay them if you follow these programs and put them into their proper place. His newsletters, the first ones that have come out, are very valuable. So you can write to Jonathan Marshall. Parapolitics is the title of his newsletter, 747 Front Street, San Francisco, 94111. Well, the New York Times had two large sections by Seymour Hersh on this problem of terrorism, the CIA, Gaddafi, and international terrorism. But what Seymour Hersh wrote about wasn't about Gaddafi at all. The title of the first story in the New York Times Magazine section on the 14th was The Gaddafi Connection. And underneath it says, a former CIA analyst publicly reveals the story behind a group of ex-CIA and military men who've been selling restricted material and their expertise for use by Libya terrorists. But as you read the article, it has no more to do with the title than you can. You have to get a hold of it and copy it from the library if you don't have the New York Times Sunday edition yourself 2 weeks in a row. Translated, what Seymour Hersh is saying in the entire article is that a CIA analyst whose father had the highest decorations in the CIA, their four brothers in the CIA, realized what a foul operation it was. They were funding and training assassins for all those terrorist groups I mentioned. He met personally with Carlos the Jackal, who was responsible and claimed credit for killing the Jewish athletes in Munich in 1972, for blowing up Jews in Paris, in London, all over the world. Carlos is part of this operation, and they were also sending weapons to South Africa under the table, and at least 300,000 timers that blow up and explode and kill people, and guns with silencers shipped all over the world. This analyst went to the CIA and told them what was going on, and instead of their doing anything about it, and he went to the FBI and the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, he became hunted. He had to change his name. He had to go into hiding. He had to lose his identity. He pleaded with the agencies to stop it. And one of the proofs that it was and is still a CIA operation, and we'll go again into the motives of why they're doing it and how, is the fact that they have allowed it to continue. And only because certain murder cases are being investigated, such as the Judge Wood case in Texas or the stealing of tons of material at China Lake for Gaddafi and military secrets going to Libya and to Syria and all over the Middle East and Europe and to Carlos. Or in the investigation of particular murders in this country, a student at University of Colorado or Judge Wood, no matter where they're tapping, they're hitting this team. This is the assassination team, and I'll have a lot in the next few weeks and months to say, and I've done many broadcasts on them before. The important thing is that they're getting the New York Times and Jack Anderson and other newspaper articles at the present time, and very many of the murders that they tap, they're going to come right back to these assassination teams, going right down to John Kennedy's assassination, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, in fact, Edwin Wilson, one of the parties involved, whose name runs through the Seymour Hersh article, weaves in and out of it, was the man that supplied the material that blew up the car for Orlando Letelier on Embassy Row with Sandra Moffat, and our United States CIA supplied the machinery to overthrow and kill Allende and to kill his ambassador in Washington, D.C., This team have been supplying these weapons and the machinery to blow up people all over the world. They make simulated mountains and architecture that blows up fountain pens, dishes, lamps, traveling cases. They said, as I say, to Gaddafi alone, the machinery to set up a factory for 300,000 pieces of murder equipment, an assassination factory. Then the CIA sent Green Berets over to train them. Now, all of this that I'm throwing out is absolutely scandalous, but I've been on the air 9 years, and I've done research for 17 years, And everything I've said was scandalous, and I never could figure out why more people weren't outraged at the bits and pieces that I was picking up day by day. But now, finally, we have the New York Times and other newspaper people writing about this. The second article Seymour Hersh did is a continuation of the Gaddafi story, but as I said before, it isn't about the Gaddafi connections. It's about the CIA. It's about actions that took place with the approval of the CIA, with the Pentagon, and the very man who blew the whistle, this Kevin McCulhey, he was on television this week, was forced to go into hiding as if he were the criminal, even though he's describing the silencers, the assassination weapons, the violence that was approved, condoned, and while he worked for them, he thought that it was always a CIA operation, and it turns out it actually is, and it always was, and that the necessity to arm the appearance of the left, the terrorism, will fade away each day as you read headlines. There was one this week, the PLO philangelists each say the other's training Nazis, and this goes back to Beirut and the PLO and the training of Nazi terrorism to send around the world. The people that you thought were left or associated with Russia, such as Gaddafi or the PLO, have been very closely linked to the Nazi movement. Now, just this week, Gaddafi said that he may line up with the Soviet Union, he may strengthen the Soviet ties. Why? Partly because the ship is sinking and the rats are leaving it. And Gaddafi, everything he paid for was supplied to him by our CIA. Everything he did, the killers that did the 11 or 12 murders that he's charged with, were trained by the CIA. People like Frank Turpel would promise an opponent or a man running against Gaddafi that Gaddafi didn't like, who lived in Egypt. Turpel was hired to do the security for the man's house. And at the same time as earning a salary to do the security, he brought in the anti-Castro Cubans trained by our CIA to murder the man. So he gets money for killing him on the one hand, he got the money from him for putting security into his house. And those are the kind of dogs that our government, through our tax dollars and through the press, allowing this to accumulate and pile up. These are the kind of people that I've been talking about for a long time and are now getting more exposed in the news. Now, we kicked out some of the people of Gaddafi's Libyan group in Washington and closed the embassies because we said there were so many murders and they were so violent. And now they're saying, well, we may move to the Soviet Union because they know that all the violence, as I said, was provided for them. The training for Idi Amin and for Gaddafi, for Carlos, was United States people from the Navy and Marines and the Berets and the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. We supplied the weapons from California, from Colorado, from Virginia, from Pennsylvania, from Georgia, from Mitchell Ward Bell. We supplied the silencers, the guns, the training. And then when we go to investigate a murder and we find, oh, that Gaddafi's behind and they're blaming him, he is saying, wait a minute, it's not me. And then a man who worked with him says, wait, it's not me either. And he says, finally, I can't go to any agency in the federal government and tell them what's going on. I'll go to a journalist. And he goes to Seymour Hersh, who broke the My Lai story years ago, and that's how the story began to unfold. And then others get on the bandwagon with the bits and pieces. Now, Seymour Hersh has some interesting information. His articles are packed with information, but there's something very strange lacking in his articles, and I just have spent hours, about 20 hours this week, just outlining and retyping one segment of the New York Times Sunday section into about 40 typewritten pages to get familiarity with the dates and the names of the meeting places that are just in this one single article. But the article that he writes about has to do with Frank Turpel and Edwin Wilson. He goes into their biography. He gives a lot of information about them. And I might say that on KLRB last July, it's almost a year ago, I was analyzing the most important stories of the past 2 years that had taken place up to July of last year, from 1978 to 80. And number one on that sheet, and you can order that quarter or self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a sheet from that broadcast. The most important news story of all was the past tapes and broadcasts I had done on Frank Edward Turpel in Washington, D.C., and George Gregory Corcola, because I said these are the assassination teams used by the government. They worked with the CIA. They were presently in Libya, and that was the number one story. And then I listed eight other news stories that were of utmost importance, and every single one of those eight taps into the Turpel Cola assassination team stories that had to do with the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the Jonestown, the setting up of Jonestown and the murder of Leo Ryan, Colonial Dignidad on the border of Chile and Argentine, the Abscam Brilab case with the indictment of Carlos Marcello and Irv Davidson, the murder of Pope John Paul I, and the relationship of John Paul II to organized crime and Nazis, Auschwitz, and the Hitler agents, the murder of Nelson Rockefeller to make way for Ronald Reagan with the South African-California connections to his murder, the murder of John Paisley, which tapped directly into the Nugenhand Bank, which goes back to Turpel and Corcola. I'm throwing out a lot of names, but also that evening a year ago I talked about Joseph Mengele, the American citizen, who was a citizen before he was at Auschwitz doing the experimentations, and how he was protected by the FBI and the United States government. Now, every one of those items that I summarized 1 year ago, if you put a circle around where you put the CIA and Navy intelligence, and you listed those with spokes, each one of them would interweave like a spider web because they're all one ball of wax. And what they consist of are scandalous episodes in which mergers took place for the sole purpose of gaining control of specific governments, creating military coups, killing labor leaders, newspaper publishers, creating banks where they could fund right-wing Nazi organizations through narcotics traffic, and rebuild the Nazis in almost every single country in the world. That's why the groups that you think were radical towards the Soviets, like the Palestinian groups or the so-called third world countries, are very well trained with Nazi experts in their police departments and privately wearing armbands and swastikas. The headquarters have been down in Argentina, in Chile, and in Spain. This Licio Gelli has fled Italy. He's still in hiding, probably down in South America when the Italian scandal broke. The Italian government changed hands this last week for the first time in 41 years. The Italian Christian Democratic Party is out. The French have gone socialist. Margaret Thatcher is in trouble today. The Germans, a million of them, signed a petition to get NATO and American missiles out of Germany. Turkey has said, we don't want NATO bases. We don't want to be responsible for you landing on our shores for the Persian Gulf problems. The Soviet Union is making overtures to Saudi Arabia, the Soviet Union. China said that George Bush and Alexander Haig have overreacted to the Soviet system. They don't think it's that much of a threat to them. And one by one, the countries are flaking off. They're watching these scandals evolve, and every single country just about has had a coup and has had people murdered that can be directly linked to this modus operandi known as the American intelligence establishment. When Ronald Reagan became president with his bravado and his anti-Russian speeches as if he was ready to go to war the next day, and when Alexander Haig followed up with his speeches, the people around the world, our allies, pulled back. Italy said they were going to, rechange their thinking and try for treason. Many, many people and the top NATO officials have resigned, lost their security clearances, and so forth. There is too much that is tainted. There's too many hundreds of millions of dollars missing from various banks. I've run those down before, $50 million out of Berlin, $300 million the Wells Fargo, $55 million in Nugenhand. It goes on and on. It adds up to billions of dollars. The banks can't be investigated without tapping into these sources, and therefore it's interesting now, at this time, when there is nowhere else to go, that Seymour Hersh and the New York Times and Jack Anderson begin to push away again at these articles on Turpel and Edwin Wilson. But they're very silent about Corcola, and he is the bottom line. He is the guy from New Jersey who works heavily with Samuel Cummings of the CIA in London, provides weapons, sets up assassination teams, sets up the anti-Castro Cubans, and is responsible for murders all over the world. George is missing. George Kirkola is missing. Michael Sindona wants to talk, and they're going to make a movie about Frank Turple in London. Maxine Cheshire, one of my favorite writers, had an article this week. Frank Turple may be in a starring role in London. He is in hiding, and he's going to talk about the CIA and how he's an international arms merchant for the CIA. And according to her in the Washington Post, the documents that he has are going to embarrass the agency, if nothing else. Now, he's pulled in to help make a movie called The Turple Story, a group of people that made the movie about Saudi Arabia called Death of a Princess. And Jim Hogan, the writer, H-O-U-G-A-N, who is a fantastic writer and researcher, is going to help Turple in London, according to Maxine Cheshire. She said that Washington author Jim Hogan, the bureau chief from Harper's Magazine, who wrote the best-selling book Spooks, which I've mentioned many times in this program, that book is almost a textbook source on the subject of spies for hire. It's supposed to be one of the few people in the world trusted by Frank Turple, and he may make a brief visit to take time off from his book on Watergate to be a coordinator consultant to a movie on Frank Turple. Well, that should have a few people nervous, because when they start making documentary movies about Frank Turple, look out. Things are going to fall in bits and pieces. There won't be any big headlines saying, oh, yes, we killed this person or we killed that person. But there are individual books and articles and pieces of news just flooding the media right now. I say flooding, I mean like on Section D, a little column, maybe one-inch column. But it's significant that it's covered at all, and the fact that certain actions are being taking place means that they're more nervous every day. For example, I mentioned last week on the program about the Dominica invasion that failed, the use of the Nazi, the Klan, the subpoena that was put down to call John Connally and the representative from Texas. Well, one of the men who put up money for this operation, an attorney from Memphis, Tennessee, was shot in the mouth, I think I talked about last Sunday night on the broadcast. And 2 days later, there was a little article in the San Jose News. Well, I'm sure all of you know the San Jose News. It wasn't even the San Jose Mercury. It's an evening edition of a little paper that really doesn't get out even by subscription. You hardly see it. And in Section D on page 19, there's a one-inch column. The attorney who put up $30,000 towards this invasion, which involved drug smuggling, millions of dollars, the highest echelon of intelligence, Canada, United States, leaders of the fascist organizations with Nazi flags, one of the attorneys, no less, not one of the little schleppers that goes along, was shot through the mouth 2 days after his name was mentioned as putting up money in the court. The court was going, case going on in Louisiana, and he lives in Arkansas, was shot in the mouth. Well, so much for that. Now, I want to just briefly run down a little bit before I get into the New York Times article on these operations that Seymour Hersh did. Some of the material I did a while back on broadcast that I've given you the numbers up about these men. Their names first broke in the news in January 1980, and that was about a year and a half ago, with headlines, 10,000 guns seized, two people arrested, $2 million machine gun sale. That was the New York Times the day before Christmas these stories broke. Ex-CIA agent held in $2.5 million arms deal. And it goes into gun runners arrested in New York City at the Hilton Hotel for gun running. There were several, five or six headlines on this subject, and the summary of the first six articles that came out were that Frank Turple, a CIA agent in 1971, had set up headquarters in Paris, and it had an office in Washington, D.C. called Oceanic Corporation, that he used safe houses in London and Paris, Panama, New Jersey, and Washington that belonged to the CIA, that they supplied weapons and guns for specifically assassinations, and that's the area I studied, particularly the killing of people, why they're killed, particularly candidates, the president or a candidate for presidency or a senator or a newspaper person or prominent people such as John Lennon. these men were arrested, and the first article said that they supplied machine guns, .22 rifles for assassinations, equipped with silencers, poison darts, briefcase bombs, letter bombs, hand grenades, booby traps, millions of dollars of rifles, machine guns manufactured in Britain, and they were trained assassination teams by the CIA. Now, that broke a year and a half ago. They had a corporation George Corcola had called Amstec Corporation in New Jersey, an electronic firm. And this equipped Scotland Yard, Exxon Oil, Mobil Oil, and George Corcola, who was arrested, and he fled the country with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel. The bail was reduced to nothing. George Corcola headed Amstec, and the two men worked for major corporations that had been fronts for espionage. They were obviously high-level assassins, and they obtained their silencers from Mitchell Wurbel, who's written up in the book Spooks by Hogan at great length. And the first articles talked about their setting up the murder in the Olympic Games for the athletes, the 11 Israeli athletes. They admitted they had set that up. Turpel had moved to Paris, and they had set up killings in Paris of other prominent people. And the first article said they were all CIA-connected, and they had funds that got them along with the local police and various people that they could escape ever being arrested. Now, I never read in any Jewish magazines or any Jewish groups that they weren't outraged that the CIA, with people working with Scotland Yard and the CIA, admitted killing these Jewish athletes in Munich and many more other Jews and attempted murders in London and on the continent of Europe and the Middle East. But the first articles also linked them to the anti-Castro Cubans, which goes back to the Kennedy assassination in the Bay of Pigs, to the Korean Reverend Moon, who my research has linked to Hitler's money in Asia, to Idi Amin and his assassination squads, to the Palestinian Liberation Organization, to Libya, and international terrorism. Now that, I'm reading to you, is just from a sheet that I did a year and a half ago on KLRB, on these characters, a year and a half ago. And as I say, now it's breaking in what we call the establishment media. These individual stories broke in Washington Post, New York Times, but then they were shut up for a year and a half, as if you could hide all of this. The San Francisco Chronicle had an article in January 1980, a year and a half ago, "The Arms Dealer Who Talks Too Much." That's Frank Turpel from McLean, Virginia, who worked for the Navy, the Army, a cryptographic code breaker, using silencers and weapons from Mitchell Wurbel from Powder Springs, Georgia. Frank Wurbel said, "Frank worked for us. His dealings were approved of by the State Department, by the Office of Munitions Control." Turpel and Corcola's clients, according to the San Francisco article, were the FBI, the Secret Service, and the Federal Aviation. And I asked at the time if Dorothy Hunt's plane crashes at the height of Watergate and they are doing investigative work for Federal Aviation, that could be very cozy. Or, as I mentioned before, the security service that Frank Turpel gives for a man in Egypt, and Gaddafi wants him murdered, so they send in their anti-Castro Cubans to murder him while they're supposed to be making the house secure. So I was bringing up, this was in January 1980, I was talking about these characters on the air. I was talking about the attorney for Frank Turpel in New York City when they were arrested was James LaRosa, who's also the attorney for the Esposito racetrack ties. There was a big scandal in New York City about Meade Esposito, who's the head of the Brooklyn Democratic Party, who's the advisor to presidents, to governors, to mayors, who was involved in an $18 million scandal relating to a Catholic order in New York City, who had money given to a co-worker of his, Representative Hanna, Richard Hanna in California, who was linked to Tansung Park and the Korean CIA. So this can of worms of organized crime, presidents, advisors, governors, mayors, the Catholic group, lawyers in common with Turpel and Corcola was in the news a year and a half ago before it began to break again this week, and as I said, past weeks. And the reason it's breaking now is that everything the Justice Department investigates, or the FBI, they're going to tap back into this operation. It's vast, and it is never-ending, and at some point, the cords have to be cut. We'll take a one-minute break and then get back to these characters and do a little bit more about the Seymour Hersh article this week in the Times.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.